Coleman's slider hammered to left field. This one is getting out of hurry. Home run. Brett Laurie has given the Blue Jays a 4-3 lead here in the seventh inning.
In a hurry indeed. That's the play of the game brought to you by Rogers On Demand. Watch the Jays live from anywhere, online or on the go at RogersOnDemand.com. And Brett Laurie, a terrific at bat against a tough righty-on-righty guy in Lewis Coleman there in the seventh inning, leading things off. Laurie hung in there, and hung in there for a while. He fouled off a big whack load of two-strike pitches, I thought, but he didn't. He didn't foul off any two-strike pitches. Wow, memories can be deceiving. But he did crush that ball, and it got out in a hurry. Two left center field, the margin of victory of the Blue Jays. Hold on with a shutout inning of relief each after that from Casey Jansen. And Frank Francisco, despite a leadoff walk and a stolen base, manages to wriggle out of it and pick up his 11th save of the season. The Blue Jays beat the Royals 4-3 on only 5 hits after scoring 4 runs on only 6 hits last night. I'm Mike Wilner. This is the Jays Talk. We're taking your phone calls at 416-870-0590, star 590 on the cell, and long distance 1-888-666-0590. If you are driving, please be extraordinarily careful out there, assuming you're driving somewhere in Ontario. The weather outside is, from what we're told, horrific. Please be careful. And if you're going to call in from your car, yeah, I might not do that today. 416-870-0590, star 590 on the cell, and long distance 1-888-666-0590. There are reports all over the Twitter sphere from some pretty important people. Jason Stark, Peter Gammons, Buster Olney, Jerry Krasnick, a lot of the big hitters who aren't going to miss on something like this. And it appears as though former Blue Jay, Baltimore Oriole great Mike Flanagan has passed away at the age of 59. We really don't know much more than that right now, but it's a pretty sad night across Major League Baseball for anyone that Mike Flanagan touched over the course of his career. He was a Blue Jay from 1987 to 1990. He pitched one of the greatest games I've ever seen. And Blue Jay fans, longtime Blue Jay fans, will remember this well. A heartbreaking game for the Blue Jays. 1987, October 3rd, the next to last day of the season. And the Jays went into that game tied for first place with the Detroit Tigers, having lost 5 in a row. Mike Flanagan threw 11 innings in that game and left in a 2-2 tie. And in that top of the 12th inning was the ball that went through the legs of Manny Lee for the game-winning Alan Trammell hit. And the Blue Jays lost to Frank Tanan and Larry Herndon the next day, and that was it for them. An incredible performance that day. That's my seminal memory of Mike Flanagan as a ball player, as a human being. I didn't get to interact with him when he was a player, but I got to know him as a broadcaster and as the Orioles general manager. He was hilarious. He was always warm and welcoming and generous with his time. Did an interview with him last year for the Blue Jays this week. We talked about that game in 1987, and he talked about wanting to go out there for the 12th, and he couldn't believe that Cito wouldn't let him go out there for the 12th inning, which is amazing to me. I mean, when you think about what pitchers do right now. I know they say it about everybody, that they were a terrific guy. This guy was a terrific guy. And Mike Flanagan will be missed. No question. 416-870-0590. Star 590 on the cell. Long distance. 1-888-666-0590. We will be getting on fan590.com shortly. I'm led to understand that the TFC game was on, but BMO Field is being evacuated right now because of the lightning strikes in the area. We can hear the thunder even through the closed roof here. So we'll be getting on the website shortly. Again, 416-870-0590, star 590 on the cell, long distance, 1-888-666-0590. Want to talk about the Blue Jays' win today. Share your memories of Mike Flanagan. If you're an old-time Blue Jay fan, we'd love to hear from you. We're going to start with Christian in Toronto. Christian, welcome to the program.
Yeah, how are you doing tonight, Mike? I know it's a sad night. The only memory I have really of Mike Flanagan when he was a Jay was his crazy windup. Because he was a tall guy, but he had a killer windup. And I just remember his windup was really when he was on the Jays. At that time, I was only like 6 years old. I was a young buck, but I used to watch the Jays still. But anyways, how about them Los Jays tonight? I love Los Jays tonight. I called you the other night about Francisco when they should have used them down in Seattle. They put Roush, and then he got the appendectomy. But look at Francisco now. He's shining. You know, they got him from Texas. We gave up a big bat in Napoli. John Farrell, I called you earlier about his managerial. I know he's a rookie, so. But you got to, put in the closer. We're paying him pretty big bucks. We got him from Texas. So you got to try him out more often than not, right? Because Roush, he's an old-timer. I seen the other day he had an Expos uniform on. You know, that's already along the Expos when he started with the Expos. But anyway, I just love the bullpen, how Lich is pitching too. Which I called the other time, too, that they should have left him in that Seattle when Karp went deep twice. They should have left him in for the third inning. But they put the Miller guy, and you've seen what happened. But you've seen what Lich is doing now. And I think they should keep Lich the same way. And I like the way the pitching is looking a lot for the Jays. It's getting me very excited. And hopefully maybe they cleared some cap with the Aaron Hill trade and stuff. And they should go after a big bat like Fielder. He can DH, play first base. Adam Lynn likes the DH too. Why not go for Fielder?
All right. Thank you, Christian. Appreciate the call and appreciate the history of all the calls you've made to the program as well. That was lovely. They didn't save any money on the deal. Kelly Johnson and Aaron Hill basically make the same amount of money. They save John McDonald's salary, which is really not that much. As far as all the stuff you said, Frank Francisco is getting every opportunity to be the closer because Frank Francisco has closer stuff. He's got the swing and miss stuff. And he used it for a big strike out of Eric Hosmer today, but gave up a couple of line drives and a walk. So not a great outing for him, but good enough to secure his 11th save of the season. And as for Prince Fielder, feels like we talk about him every night. Prince Fielder would be a wonderful addition to this team, no question about it. But Prince Fielder is going to demand a very long-term deal with a very high amount of money and is really, I have my doubts as to whether he's going to be worth it over the last 3-4 years of that contract. On we move to a caller whose name, unfortunately, is not showing up on my screen. So tell me who you are.
Terry from Newmarket.
Terry from Newmarket. Go ahead.
Okay, Mike, just quick point from the game. I have been so impressed this year with from what I've seen with the speed of Lori's bat. And it just seems like he can turn on that inside pitch probably as good as, maybe even as good as Batista. And I don't know, maybe he's not there at that level yet, as Batista is. But, I mean, I think he's probably got one of the quickest bats I've seen in a long time for a young player. And which brings me up to my question. I wanted to know, who do you think, just in the MLB, in your mind, has the quickest bat in the MLB? And, I mean, some names that come to my mind are Hamilton and Cano, but I want to know what you think of that.
Well, that's a good question. Wow, that's a very good question. I'm going to have to think about that one. Bautista creeps to mind immediately because it is a huge, fast, violent swing. But yeah, I'm going to have to think about that. Thank you, Terry. appreciate the call and giving me something to think about tonight. Raptor Eyes John, welcome to the program.
Yo, Miguel.
You're an old-timer, Raptor Eyes John.
Yeah, I was just thinking about Mike. That's tragic, man.
Yes, it is. 59 years old.
Oh, wow, yeah. That's really young. I remember that whole Detroit series, Detroit and Jays, one-run games. Man, my heart was so broken.
Yep.
The man you lead letting the ball go between his legs.
Yeah, and you remember, you know, Pat Gillick traded for Mike Flanagan on August 31st of that year, which was the deadline to get into to be eligible for the postseason roster.
Right.
And I remember at that time, it's changed since, but at that time there was a major league rule that by 11:59 p.m. on August 31st, the player had to be in the airspace of the city. That was the rule. He had to be in Toronto airspace before midnight. And so we were watching, we were listening to the news and waiting for the plane to come, and that was really some night.
Wow. Days have changed, eh?
Yeah.
Yeah, man. I also remember, didn't he give up that home run to, who was it?
To Jose Canseco?
Yeah, Jose Canseco.
First fifth deck shot ever hit here, yes, in the 89 American League Championship Series.
Yeah, well, I would say, damn, he smoked that one.
Yes, he did.
funny, because we got Canseco. When did we have Jose? Jose was here, what?
96, maybe? Okay. 98?
Because we had him and Roger. I remember Roger threw a hissy fit when we let Jose go.
Yeah, all those years kind of blend together for me, but I'm going to say it was 98 when Canseco was here. Hit 46 home runs.
Yeah. Well, anyway, about the present Jays.
Yep.
I think Laurie looks like the real deal. And I'm really impressed with Jose Bautista. I mean, with Jose, because he seems to hit home runs that count. I remember he hit the one over Doc that put them ahead. He just hit this one a couple of series ago that put the Jays ahead, and he put this one up that tied the game up. So, you know, he seems to hit meaningful home runs, you know?
Yeah, it seems to. I'm sure that there's a pretty even distribution, but there are definitely a lot that you remember as some pretty big home runs, including tonight's for sure.
Right. Mickey Larry, he made the plays in the field. Looks like his back can really talk for him, and I'm impressed. I wasn't that impressed, you know, when all the hullabaloo was going on about getting him up here and he was going to be next coming, but he seemed to be proving it. So, you know, that's really good, because I would hate to have him come up here and, you know, and turn out to be a bum, but...
Well, it's tough. It's tough to be a bum at 21, John. I appreciate the call, but you're exactly right. Very, very, very rarely does someone come up to the major leagues and live up to the hype and exceed the hype. And that is what Brett Laurie is doing. And Brett Laurie, 2-for-3 tonight with a triple and a home run that untied the game in the bottom of the seventh inning, gave the Jays the 4-3 lead, and they go on to win 4-3. He's played in 18 games. He's got 20 hits. 10 of them are for extra bases, 4 doubles, 2 triples, and 4 homers. 11 RBIs, 9 runs scored, 12 RBIs and 9 runs scored in his 18 games, hitting about .330 with an OPS, closing in on 1,000 if he didn't get it over with tonight's performance. It has been amazing to watch Brett Laurie in the infancy of his career. Let's listen in on what the skipper had to say. John Farrell speaks after every game, and after every game, we have it for you. Here's John Farrell's post-game comments.
Very good win tonight. You know, Ricky had to battle through the 6 innings of work that he was out there. That's a very good hitting team. They've got a very good 2-strike approach. As we mentioned last night, and again, I think 6 of their hits came with 2 strikes, but he battled to get through the 6. You know, Jose once again comes up big, a hanging breaking ball for the 2-run homer. And then we were able to put together another run to score the 3 in that inning. But when you consider that, Brett's never faced a guy like Coleman with the sidearm, with the stuff that he has, the year that he's having, and then to, hit the decisive home run is obviously pretty exciting. You know, the triple into left center field, not too many guys are going to look to, you know, stretch a double into a triple, particularly to the pull side of the field. But again, I think it just shows the explosiveness that he has. And he made a heck of a play on the slow roller that it came into his backhand, too. You know, those are the types of play that his athleticism really allows him to do. And it was just a well-played game. You know, Jesse, Casey, and Frankie did their job, and just a clean game all the way around.
John, it's obviously very early, but can you put into context or can you compare Brett Laurie's ability to hit in the clutch and perform in the clutch to anything you've seen in your career?
You know, that's a question that I think a lot of us have either been asked or, you know, you try to put it in its proper context. And I think, you know, the best way we can describe it, yeah, he's in the early stages of his career. And to, you know, in baseball, I think it's very normal to draw comparisons to other people, but at the moment, we're just enjoying the abilities that he has. You know, the bat speed, the overall quick twitch ability. I don't want to say, you know, who he can or can't be. I never want to, you know, start to put names or almost put a cap on one person's ability. I do know one thing. He can turn around a fastball, the best fastball that we've seen, whether that's Walden with the Angels, and good stuff here tonight, too. I mean, they've pitched well against us these two first ball games. And he's done a very good job at the plate.
John, Casey Jansen, another successful outing. What do you think has allowed him to pitch the way he has this year?
You know, for the majority of the year, he has done a great job of attacking the zone. He's worked ahead in the count. He's used his cutter very good on left-handers in on their hands. He's able to front door the cutter to some right-handers to give a different look. But when you look at the body language and the demeanor on the mound, he pitches with a lot of confidence and attacks the strike zone and doesn't fear the hitter in the box or the situation that's unfolding in front of him. Whether it's in an inning stint or three innings like his last outing, he's been a key member of our pen.
Can you just talk about the way that Ricky hung in there and battled tonight? I think they showed on the broadcast that, you know, he was frustrated, I think, after the third, but, you know, he sort of was resilient and sort of hung in there, and maybe not his best outing, but he worked through it.
Yeah, you know, he clips Gordon the first pitch of the game. And it was one of those games that he didn't have his best command, as we've seen, particularly in this most recent stretch. Then another walk to Gordon, who, you know, each time he got on base to lead off an inning, he scores. Then he gets an 0-2 curveball that he hits out of the ballpark. Not to highlight just Gordon in that situation, but, you know, Ricky's competitiveness, you know, we talked before the game about how he's channeled that and been very efficient. I think tonight was one of those times where he relied on it a lot to get through some situations when, you know, one pitch or the other wasn't always working at a given point in time in the game, and he battled through it, did a very good job.
There he is, John Farrell, talking about tonight's Blue Jays win over the Kansas City Royals, 4-3. Brett Laurie with a game-winning home run, and it's true. People do want to hang a tag on Brett Laurie. Who's he look like? Who's he going to be? The next two. And thank you, John Farrell, for basically saying, just let him be the first Brett Laurie and enjoy what he's doing, because so far it is a phenomenal start to a major league career. Solid outing from Ricky Romero. Certainly not up to par with his last five, but good enough. And we've seen, I mean, this is, again, part of being an ace. That's what Ricky Romero is becoming. When you're not at your best, you can still gut it out and keep your team in a ball game, and that's exactly what Ricky did tonight. 4-3, the final score. Jose Bautista with a two-run rip, his 37th of the year, because he knew Mark Teixeira was going to hit number 35 for the Yankees tonight. We are going to extend the Jays talk all the way to 11 o'clock Eastern time at 416-870-0590, star 590 on the cell and long distance, 1-888-666-0590. Talk about the ball game, and we talk about Mike Flanagan, who passed away tonight, former Blue Jay, great Baltimore Oriole, Cy Young Award winner in 1979, pitched one of the greatest games I've ever seen. In 1987, the penultimate game of the season for the Blue Jays, the heartbreaker of Flanagan, went 11 innings and gave up one earned run, and the Jays lost it in the 12th. 59 years old. We will have the scoreboard. Say goodbye to the network. When we come back, it is the Blue Jays Radio Network. Back here at Rogers Center, the Blue Jays take down the Kansas City Royals 4-3. Brett Laurie leads off the seventh with a home run to break the 3-3 tie. Quick look at the scoreboard for you. The Boston Red Sox lead the Texas Rangers 13-2. That game is in the ninth inning, the bottom of the ninth inning. Adrian Gonzalez, Jacoby Ellsbury, Kyle Crawford, each with home runs. Yankees lost 6-4 to the A's in 10. Coco Crisp drove in five, including a three-run homer in the 10th inning. It is 5-1 Baltimore over Minnesota through eight. The Detroit Tigers and Tampa Bay Rays are tied 2-2 in the bottom of the 10th. The Arizona Diamondbacks beat Washington 4-2. John McDonald with a highlight reel play at shortstop. What else is new? Rubber match of this series goes tomorrow night. We're on at 7 Eastern for a 7:07 first pitch. Brett Cecil against Jeff Francis. You've been listening to Blue Jays Baseball, brought to you by Rogers, a proud partner of the Toronto Blue Jays. This copyrighted broadcast is presented by authority of Rogers Blue Jays Baseball Partnership and may not be reproduced or retransmitted in any form, and the accounts and descriptions of this game may not be disseminated without the express written consent of Rogers Blue Jays Baseball Partnership or the Blue Jays Radio Network. For Jerry Howard, Alan Ashby, Tom Young, Joe Sicilia, Joel McFadden, I'm Mike Wilner. Be careful out there. Good night from Rogers Center.
Sportsnet Radio, the Fan 590. It's where the Jays play.
Here's the 1-1.
Bautista hammers high and deep to left. This one is not coming back. Off the facing of the third tank, Jose Bautista has launched his 37th on the year, leading the big leagues, a two-run job, and we're all even at two.
A timely home run there for Jose Bautista as the Royals had scored single runs in the first and third. After Yunel Escobar gets drilled and isn't very happy about it, Bautista gets buzzed on the first pitch and a couple of pitches later destroys one off the facing of the 300 level. Ties the game 2-2. The Jays would go ahead 3-2 on an RBI triple by Brett Laurie, but the Royals tied it right away on Alex Gordon's 17th to lead off the fifth. But Brett Laurie did it again. Bottom of the seventh inning, he goes deep to break the tie. Blue Jays' fifth and final hit of the day, and they beat Kansas City 4-3. Jesse Litch gets the win in relief as Litch, Casey Jansen, and Frank Francisco each supply an inning of shutout relief. Darren Mastroianni in his Major League debut, 0-2, flies to right, strikes out, and gets a bunt down in the seventh inning to move J.P. Arencibia from first to second. We will find out maybe tonight, maybe tomorrow, what the future is for Darren Mastroianni, if he will still be here tomorrow, who will get sent down when Kelly Johnson reports Johnson should be in the lineup tomorrow. I'm Mike Wilner. This is the Extendo Jays Talk, taking your calls until 11 o'clock. At 11:20, Jeff Sammet will have Ernie Witt on, teammate of Mike Flanagan's with the Blue Jays in 87, 88, 89. Later on tonight, Sammet will hear from, will speak to Dustin McGowan. I believe that's the leadoff man, actually. Dustin McGowan, you'll hear from him at 11 o'clock. So stick around. It's going to be a great night here on Sportsnet Radio, the Fan 590. It is not a great night in the baseball world. Mike Flanagan passing away, found on a trail on his property tonight. He was 59 years old. If you have any Mike Flanagan memories to share, please feel free, 416-870-0590, star 590 on the cell, long distance, 1-888-666-0590. Before we get to your calls, though, our fine up the dial sister station, 680 News, has an even finer news director, Scott Metcalf, and Scott is joining us now to talk about what's going on outside. Scott's all yours.
Just a little bit of everything, Mike. Right now for the city of Toronto, we have a severe thunderstorm warning that includes Toronto, Vaughan, Richmond Hill, Markham, for all those folks heading in that area, and also Newmarket, Northern York region, Pickering, Oshawa, Southern Durham region, Uxbridge. Also, for people who might know someone in Cottage Country, or if they're listening in, it's Bracebridge, Gravenhurst, Parry Sound, Huntsville, and Halliburton as well. Again, that's a severe thunderstorm warning. Right now, there is a tornado warning that has been in effect for the last little while for the city of Hamilton, and it now also includes Niagara Falls and Welland and St. Catharines and Grimsby. That, again, that's a tornado warning, and in a situation like that, Environment Canada recommends that you take shelter immediately. when there's a tornado warning around. Earlier, we had a tornado watch for the city of Toronto. That has still been in and out. The active weather is going to be with us at least for another half hour, maybe a bit longer than that, according to the forecasters. Maybe by midnight, it'll start to calm down. There have been a lot of power outages reported in pockets spread out over a wide area. There's some in Burlington and Oakville you heard about. Also some up in Newmarket, others in other parts of the city. So if you approach one of those intersections where the traffic lights are out, remember that it's you treat it as a four-way stop. And been hearing reports of heavy rain, where there has been heavy rain, and there's been pockets of it, some areas getting more than others, that the traffic has been affected by that. On the Burlington Skyway Bridge, the winds and rain were so strong that police were actually out there slowing people down to get them over the bridge. But that's the situation right now. Again, for the city of Toronto, severe thunderstorm warning in effect. So we still have some active weather in the area. Watch out for that. Back to you, Mike.
Thank you, Scott. And please, if you're out there driving around, exercise extreme caution. I know that driving has all of a sudden in our society the last couple of years become something to do while you're doing other things. Don't do other things. Don is in Niagara Falls. Don, welcome to the Jays Talk.
Thank you. It was not too comforting just listening to that report because I'm phoning from Niagara Falls. Tornado warning, Niagara Falls.
I'll take some cover.
For sure. I've been listening to you on the radio, but I have to shut it off. There's so much static, so on the phone it's fine. I was at that game in 87. Mike Flanagan.
In Detroit?
Yes, I was.
Wow.
I was by myself. I got a single ticket in the bleachers in left field, I believe it was. And I tell you that the atmosphere at that game was electric, and it was like World Series type of atmosphere, maybe a deciding game in the World Series. It was that good.
Well, it was some situation. I mean, there was no wild card back then. These were the two best teams in baseball. They both had 96 wins going into that game, tied for first with two games left. And I'm reminded on Twitter, and thank you, that I said that Mike Flanagan, when I spoke to him, couldn't believe that Cito Gaston took him out after 11. Wasn't Cito. It was Jimmy Williams who was the manager back then.
Yeah.
So
that's right. And I thought he only went 10 innings, but he went 11.
No, he went 11.
And the other thing I remember is that the Jays were a little bit decimated in the injuries, I believe.
Big ones.
Ernie Witt, I believe, was out.
Yep, broken rib. He slid into second base, and Paul Molitor's knee broke his rib. And Tony Fernandez had the broken elbow.
Yeah, that didn't help the situation, but it was devastating to see them go down like they did. But I'm just phoning to say that I was at that game. It was just a tremendous atmosphere, and I was glued to my seat for the entire game.
Well, I was not at the game, but no, I was watching it on TV, 17 years old. I remember it well. Thank you for the call, Don. Yeah. And you know what the Blue Jays were? That Tony Fernandez injury really took the wind right out of their sails. And then when Ernie Witt went down in Milwaukee, I mean, George Bell was trying to do it all himself. That was his MVP season. The Jays allowed two earned runs over their last two games of the season, totaling almost 19 innings. And they lost both those games because they just didn't have the firepower. They just couldn't score. Manny Lee was playing shortstop, and I don't know, it was Matt Stark was catching, but, let's see. We've got the game right here for us. It was not pretty. Greg Myers was catching then, and Manny Lee. Rick Leach was at DH late in the year. I mean, this was what one of the best teams the Blue Jays had ever assembled had to put on the field because everyone was hurt. Just a fantastic last seven games of the season with the Tigers. Seven of the last 10 games that year the Jays played were with the Tigers, and they were all one-run games. The Jays won the first three. The Tigers won the last four. And Mike Flanagan, who passed away tonight, pitched brilliantly in the next-to-last game of the season, going 11 innings, allowing one earned run in a game they lost in the 12th. Jonah is in Thornhill. Hello, Jonah.
How's it going, Mike?
All right, thanks.
Yeah, I was just wondering, and obviously you can only speculate here, but do you think it's Anthopoulos' intention to extend Kelly Johnson, or whether or not this situation is similar to Miguel Olivo, where essentially you acquire him for the purpose of just getting back a compensatory pick?
Neither. I think it's somewhere in the middle. They didn't trade him. Olivo they traded for with no intention of him ever playing for the team. They just traded the $500,000 in order to get that sandwich pick. I don't know whether Colorado was afraid he would accept arbitration or they wanted the money more or what, but that's why they traded for Olivo. With Kelly Johnson, it's a five-week audition. And to see what he's like, to get to know him, to watch him play instead of having to have your scouts watch him play, and then decide what happens. I mean, he's right now he's a type A free agent, and it's not like second base is terribly overwhelming, even though they're grouped in with shortstops and third basemen. He may well be a type A, but it might also be so that they don't have to give up a first-round pick in order to sign him in the offseason. And now that they have him, they don't. But I don't believe this was about the pick. I believe that this was about getting a chance to see Kelly Johnson. I don't know if you could hear that thunderclap through the microphone here, through the closed roof, but wow, there must be some exciting stuff going on outside. No, I don't think that's what this trade was about at all. They will have a decision to make on Kelly Johnson, no question, after the season. Whether or not to offer him arbitration, which they probably will. And then if he's a type A, they get two picks if somebody else signs him, and they don't have to give up one if they do. Time for an update from Andrew Nye. More Extendo Jays talk on the other side. Blue Jays beat the Royals. I'll let Nye tell you how they did it. It is Sportsnet Radio, the Fan 590.
Now, a 2020 update on Sportsnet Radio, the Fan 590.
It is 10:40, and well, I think we have to say hooray for the guy in the white shirt. Jays beat the Royals 4-3. Tied at 3 in the 7th, Brett Lurie stepped up.
Got a little information before I went up there, and first pitch slider, and I was just kind of had to get my foot down early. It's one of those guys that can get on you because he starts behind you, so he's kind of got to get foot down, and you know, I was lucky enough to get a pitch I could drive, and yeah, home run.
Okay, the info came from the dugout. Jose Bautista hit his major league leading 37th, a two-run shot in the 4th. Jesse Litch got the win in relief. Sad news to pass along, former Jays and Orioles pitcher Mike Flanagan was reportedly found dead on his Baltimore County property this afternoon. No word on the cause of death. Former Blue Jay Ernie Witt will join the Jeff Sammet Show at 11:20 to pass along some memories of Mike. CONCACAF officials say the game at BMO Field between Toronto FC and FC Dallas is in a holding pattern. They want to finish it tonight. So far, it's 1-0 Dallas at halftime, and if they do reschedule it, they'll start over from the beginning, they say. This is group play of the CONCACAF Champions League. Overseas, Arsenal, Benfica, and Lyon advance to the Champions League group stage. Six-year NFL vet Kirk Morrison has agreed to a 1-year contract with the Buffalo Bills. Checking some other baseball finals. Oakland in 10, a 6-4 winner over the Yankees. Boston beat Texas 13-2. Red Sox back on top of the American League East. In the National League, Arizona got it done tonight in Washington. 4-2 the final. D-backs debuts for John McDonald and Aaron Hill both went 0-4. I'm Andrew Nye, Sportsnet Radio, the Fan 590.
This is Ricky Romero of the Toronto Blue Jays, and you're listening to Blue Jays Baseball on Sportsnet Radio, the Fan 590.
Here's the 3-2 once again. Runner going, a drive on a line into left center field, and nobody's getting to this one. One hop up against the wall. Here comes Encarnacion. He will score. Into third base with a dive is Brett Lurie. It's a 3-2 Toronto lead.
Brett Lurie electrifying this crowd the first time with that RBI triple that gave the Jays a short-lived 3-2 lead. Alex Gordon would tie it with a homer in the top of the 5th, but Lurie in the bottom of the 7th led off with his 4th home run of the season, and the Blue Jays beat the Kansas City Royals 4-3 on a sad night in Blue Jay land across baseball. Mike Flanagan passing away at the age of 59, a former Blue Jay from 1987 to 1990, and a great Baltimore Oriole, Cy Young Award winner in 1979, one of the all-time great Orioles, and a wonderful guy. The very few opportunities that I got to interact with Mike Flanagan, he was kind, he was funny, self-effacing, generous with his time, and I saw him last month. It is a crazy thing. And we are working to try to get someone to see if we can talk about their memories of Mike Flanagan, someone who knew him well, before we sign off for the night. Jeff Sammet will follow us. He'll have Dustin McGowan at 11 o'clock Eastern Time. And then at 11:20, he will have Ernie Witt, who was a teammate of Mike Flanagan's in Toronto. And I don't think they were teammates in Baltimore. I think Ernie was there before Flanagan came back. But you want to stick around and listen there. Right now we go back to your phone calls. Memories of Mike Flanagan, and you want to talk about the ballgame, about the Blue Jays, about the big trade last night. We are wide open. Russ is back from Seattle, and he's in New Jersey. Hello, Russ.
Hey, Mike. Good evening. How are you? You know, you just brought back so many memories talking about the 87 season. You know, Tony Fernandez, it was Bill Madlock, if
yep.
I remember.
It was.
Slid into him, and the other guy was talking about Canseco hitting the homer in 89. And, you know, that was, I think, if I remember correctly, of John Cerruti, who also passed away.
No, that was off of Flanagan, that home run.
It was?
Yes,
okay,
it was.
But, you know, you're about the same age as me, and I remember the game that Flanagan pitched, but I remember as a kid I hated the Yankees, obviously, back then already. And the Orioles were the team, you probably remember, that had that great pitching staff, Scott McGregor and Steve Stone, who had that big year, and obviously Jim Palmer and Mike Flanagan.
Yep.
And you just go to the games to, you know, they had Eddie Murray. I just remember, you know, I was 8 years old, 9 years old then. You know, that was the pitching staff that, you know, everyone spoke about. They can throw four guys at you and really dominate you. So, you know, I have, you know, as a little kid, so many memories of him, you know, pitching for the Orioles, of those Orioles team, especially the one in 79 that went to the World Series and lost to the Pirates.
Yeah, and the 83 team, too, that went to the World Series and that beat the Phillies, the Wheeze kids. They beat the Wheeze kids.
Yes.
That was, you know, it's true. That's a pitching staff is the one you remember. It was Flanagan won the Cy Young in 79, and Stone won the Cy Young in 80, and Palmer had a bunch, and Scott McGregor was kind of the unsung hero. And those were some great Orioles teams, and Mike Flanagan was a huge part of them.
Yeah, and then Martinez picking off. Who was it, Martinez, that picked off the three Blue Jays?
It was Tippy Martinez.
Martinez, yeah. Just one thing, the last caller made a point. Now, I know you spoke about the trade last night. I couldn't figure out, good, bad, I couldn't figure out why the Jays made that trade. Now, somebody, listen, it's good, maybe it's wrong, but somebody did make the point, is he a type B or A free agent? I never know these
Who?
Things.
Which
Kelly
one?
Johnson at the end of the year.
We don't know yet. Nobody knows yet, but right now, according to the best guess, Johnson is right on the cusp of A and B's, right on the borderline.
Right, because somebody made, and I think the guy made a point of saying, you know, the caller before, which could be true. It sounds crazy, I know, but the Blue Jays will hopefully tell him, listen, we're going to offer you arbitration. You won't take it, and at least we'll get the sandwich pick, which nobody has to obviously give up that pick in order to, you know, if they pick him up. So, because it just for 5 weeks, what's he going to do any more than, you know, he's going to be a free agent, and, you know, they might bring back Aaron Hill or they might bring back somebody else. I was just surprised at the trade. But you don't believe that really has any, that's true at all about the getting that sandwich pick for if he leaves at the end of the year?
Well, I think it's a more secure sandwich pick than Aaron Hill's would be, because I think Aaron Hill might be likelier to accept that offer of arbitration than Kelly Johnson might be. But Johnson, again, could be equally likely to accept and look for the big contract the next year if he doesn't turn things around. I don't think the pick has that much to do with it, but the truth is, I think more than anything else, they wanted Kelly Johnson. They were going to be interested in him in the offseason. This takes away the risk of them having to give up a first-round pick should he wind up a type A free agent. And it also gives them 6 weeks to get to know the guy.
Right. And I appreciate it, Mike. Great job. But thanks for those, you know, you just get old quickly. You're talking about 87, you know, it's a long, long time ago. But if I remember one more thing, they lost in that series, and I know you remember this, they lost three games to the Brewers, no?
Yeah, they got swept by the Brewers in between the two Tiger series.
Yeah.
And that's the series that Ernie Witt broke his ribs.
And you still hold that if Bell would have jumped for that ball,
that game would still be going on right now. Yes. There was it didn't even have to jump. He didn't even have to jump. There was a step up in front of the fence. There's a little padding that you could step on and stand on, and all you had to do was step on that. That's how much the Herndon home run got over the fence by. He would have caught that ball, and I firmly believe that game would still be going on right now.
You know what kills me more than anything? Frank Tanano was not he was a junk ball pitcher, but he was a good, smart pitcher, and we just never were able to hit him. And he pitched our last game.
Yeah, that 1-0 game, he did. It was a great one. Jimmy Key and Frank Tanana.
Thanks, Mike.
Thank you, Russ. Appreciate it. Let's go to Alex in Toronto. You're on the Extendo Jays Talk.
Hey, Mike. First-time caller here.
Welcome aboard.
Thanks. About that Jimmy Key game in 87, I remember that was, I think Key lost that game 1-0. It was
you
a
are correct.
Game.
Yeah, Larry Herndon hit a home run for the only scoring in that game.
Yeah, but also, I remember Cecil Fielder was on first, and it was a botched hit and run. Detroit threw him out by a country mile. And then next at bat, or the very next at bat, Manny Lee hit a triple in the left field corner.
Yeah, well, probably wouldn't have been a triple if Cecil was on first.
Yeah, I know. But, that was, for a Jays fan, that was a painful, painful series. I still remember that like it was yesterday.
Yeah, me too.
About Brandon Morrow, I mean, I know he pitched a couple games ago, but I've been to the last couple games with him. And one of the trends I've seen with Brandon Morrow is that he gets himself into trouble very early into games, the first and second innings. He gets up to 50 pitches, lets in a couple runs, and then he calms down. And it's pretty smooth sailing after two innings. I don't know whether you've noticed that or not, but he does get himself in trouble, lets in a number of runs, and then it's pretty smooth sailing after that. So I'm just wondering, is there a mental thing going on there, or what's going on there?
I don't think that's true. I think you're just noticing it the few times it happens, and then you say, "Oh, that happens every time."
It's happened the last couple of games. The last, four or five games he's pitched.
Really?
At least at home, yeah, yeah.
Let's take a look. Last night he gave up 3 runs in the second inning. You are correct.
And the pitch count was really high too.
The start before that, he took a shutout into the sixth.
Okay.
All right.
The games before that.
In pitching a 3-hitter. The start before that, he gave up, 3 runs in the third and settled down after that for a while. Let's take a look at one more. The one before that, he took a shutout into the sixth. So, again,
there was a game right before that. Check the game right
before that. Okay, but, again, I'm not checking every start this year. I'm telling you that it doesn't happen as often as you think it happens. You just said it happened his last 4 or 5 starts, and I've just shown you that it's happened twice in his last 4 starts. So
and
it does happen sometimes.
It's happened 3 times in the last 5 starts.
Okay, but I'll bet you it's also happened 3 times in the last 6 or 3 times in the last 7. So the truth of the matter is it doesn't happen as often as you think it happens. But when it happens, it stands out to you. That's called confirmation bias. And the start before that, he took a shutout into the sixth inning, just so we're checking. So it's happened twice in his last 5 starts. The start before that, he was just horrible all around.
Yeah.
He never settled down. Sometimes that happens with power pitchers. There's an old adage that says if you don't get them early, you're not going to get them at all. And it's generally with those power pitchers. And it's part of the process for Brandon Morrow. And I know that people are saying, oh, he's just another A.J. Burnett and he's a 500 pitcher and all that, those loads of crap that people love to be the first one to say the negative thing so they can say they told you so.
I don't believe that. I'm a big Morrow fan.
But here's the thing. It takes a long time, especially for power pitchers. And we all have to remember that this is only Brandon Morrow's second season as a starting pitcher. You know, here's a guy who spent the entirety of his career prior to this being jerked around by the Seattle Mariners from the majors to the minors and back and forth and bullpen and rotation and all of that. He's finally getting to settle in as a starting pitcher, and it's a process.
Yeah. Well, one other question while I'm on the line. Jesse Litch, it seems to me that they're testing him to be some sort of relief pitcher or potentially a closer. Is this a closer that the Jays are is he a potential closer?
they don't seem to be looking at him as a potential closer. And they're still giving Frank Francisco those closing opportunities, and Casey Jansen got the one, that three-inning job in Oakland on Sunday.
Sure.
But they are definitely looking at him as a reliever and as a late-inning reliever. And so far, he's risen to the occasion every time he's been asked.
Yeah, but, I mean, Francisco's not in the long-term plans. Lich is, I would imagine. I mean,
well,
Lich
so is Jansen. There are a lot of other guys, and I don't know that Jesse is at the top of their list for a closer in the future. And I hope he's someone that they look at, but I don't know if he's someone that they'll look at to be that closer.
What's his fastball like?
He used to get it up to 94 before the Tommy John surgery. I haven't really been paying attention to the gun, and I didn't tonight. But it's not out of the question that he could be at 94 or 95 as a one-inning guy.
Yeah, I mean,
thanks, Alex. I want to get to a couple more callers. I appreciate that. But I just can't take every question. Joe is in Toronto. Hello, Joe.
Hey, Mike. First-time caller, long-time listener.
Welcome aboard.
Thank you. You guys are talking about 87, and, man, that just brought back so many memories. I'm so sorry about Mike Flanagan. But, I mean, like, you were there, too. I was just telling your producer before I got on the line, I blame myself for that entire collapse. I went to the first three games, all one-run games. Then we stayed home, and we thought, they'll take the fourth game for sure. And that was the game when Gibson, he hit a home run in the top of the 12th, and we lost seven straight. And if you remember how dejected everyone was, and I remember Jimmy Williams saying, man, if you told us we were going to win three out of four, I would have been happy. But the fourth game just seemed to knock the wind out of them, and they couldn't recover.
Well, which game was it? Which game was it when when Tony Fernandez broke his elbow?
It was the first game.
It was Thursday.
And that's right. It was a Thursday game. Then they had to put Manny Lee in.
Yeah. And Mike Flanagan pitched that game, too, that Thursday game.
And a Friday night, Manny Lee hit a triple. I forgot if it was in the eighth or ninth. And it got us the lead. And I believe it was a 3-2 game. The Saturday game was one of the most fantastic games I ever saw live. Do you remember Juan Dominguez?
I was at that game Saturday, and my lasting memory of that Saturday game, which was the last game the Blue Jays won in 1987, was after the game, Juan Dominguez dancing on the Blue Jays dugout after they beat the Tigers.
$2 tickets in the bleachers from Dominion. If you think, that's what I tell all these young guys, how great it used to be back then. You know?
And I got to tell you, Kurt Gibson didn't homer, and it didn't sound right when you said it to me there. That was the Kurt Gibson bloop single.
Wait a minute.
That bounced over Lloyd Mosby.
Was it really? I recall Hanky was in the 12th. But just another thing I got to bring up about that game. If you remember, that was the strike year in the NFL.
Yes.
So NBC took that game and televised it nationally on a Sunday. So that was a really, really big deal. Anyways, Mike, I just wanted to, I just wanted to say that we had the best team for the first 154 games. And why is it that we remember the losses more than we remember the wins?
Because that's what breaks your heart.
Exactly.
That's what breaks your heart.
I love your show. Been listening a long time. And I got to say one more thing to all those Blue Jay fans out there. One of the best blogs is Drunk Jays Fans. I just want to give a shout out to those guys.
Well, I'm sure they're happy to hear it. Thank you, Joe. Appreciate it. They do have a good blog. It's true. They break down this show sometimes, too, though they haven't done it in a while. They really missed the boat on that last West Coast trip last week. John is in Stouffville. Hello, John.
Hey, Mike. How's it going, buddy?
All right. Thanks. Rough night, John. A nice win for the Blue Jays.
Thank you. But I'm just really calling to inquire about the Jays' second base situation now. We've got Kelly Johnson. I know he's on a little tryout, if you will, because I know we were thinking about signing him in the off season before the trade. So my question basically is, what is the likelihood that he's going to reach Type A? If he does, what is the likelihood of that we're going to get back Johnny Mack, which I know a lot of fans really, really want to get after in the off season, and he's also said he'd like to come back. And also the situation with Hecheverria, who is absolutely ripping the ball right now in AAA. Do you think they might switch him to second base, switch you now to second base? What are your thoughts on that?
Well, first of all, the first couple of questions you asked, I can't answer because no human being knows the answers to those. I try to really stay away from the questions that require me to have a crystal ball. I don't know whether Kelly Johnson is going to stay a Type A free agent. I don't know whether he's interested in staying with the Blue Jays, whether he's going to re-sign, whether they'll offer him arbitration or not. So those questions are impossible for me to answer. So obviously, I'm not going to try to answer them. Alex Anthopoulos has said many times that Adani Echevarria is not moving to second base, that Adani Echevarria is going to spend all of next season in AAA in Las Vegas, and he will remain a shortstop. So there's the answer for that. And as far as John McDonald, given everything that went down yesterday, I think it's pretty safe to say he'll be back with the Blue Jays next year. We going to sneak in one more? Or are we not going to sneak in one more? It's up to Joe and Joe. Is it Joe and Joe? Joel, or is Brown in there? Matt Brown's in there in his band of renown. All right, we only have 60 seconds left, so we're not going to sneak in another call. Wouldn't be fair. But the Blue Jays get a big win tonight. Brett Laurie, a huge night. RBI triple in the fourth to give the Jays the lead, and then after the Royals tie it, a solo shot in the bottom of the seventh to give the Jays the lead again that they hold on to. Hitless innings of relief from Casey Jansen and Frank Francisco to close it out. Ricky Romero not to the level that he was in his last five starts, but certainly decent enough to keep the ball club in the game, and he gets a quality start for this one, although I'm sure he wouldn't refer to it as a quality start. The big news, the sad news, the passing of Mike Flanagan tonight at the age of just 59. The series concludes tomorrow. The Blue Jays and the Royals, Brett Cecil against BC's own Jeff Francis, will be on at 7 o'clock for a 7:07 first pitch. Make sure you join us then. Thanks to Joe Sicilia. Thanks to Matt Brown. Thanks to Tom Young. Thanks to all of you for listening. Stay safe out there. Good night from Rogers Center.